start from the end of the Seder and work our way back. Towards the end of the Seder, it says, "V'heishivcha Adonai Mitzrayim ba'anios ba'derech asher amarti lecha lososifo v'rosa v'ismakartem shom lo'ivecho la'avodim v'lishvachos ve'ein koneh." The final klala, final nail in the coffin of the 98 klalas is that God will send us back to Egypt in boats in the way that he told us that we're not supposed to go back, and that will be the final klala, the undoing lechora of the bris. Go back to Egypt. Now, the halacha is that you're not allowed to go back to Egypt, live there, whatever. There's all different dispensations, halachas, when you're not allowed to go back, how you're not allowed to go back, or whatever. There is an opinion of the Urayim. The Urayim says that the halacha of going back to Egypt only applies if you retrace the route that Klal Yisrael had when they came to Eretz Yisrael. That's the Isser. The Isser is to go back to Egypt the same way that we came from there to Eretz Yisrael. But if you go a different way, then that's not the Isser. We don't hold like that. That's not necessarily the halacha, but that there is a shita like that. The only problem with that is this pasuk. It says that the Ribbono Shel Olam will send us back to Egypt in the way that he said you're not allowed to go, and he's going to send us back in boats. That means that it's a sea route. Lechora, if the only Isser is going back in the exact same route that Klal Yisrael took when they came out of Mitzrayim, they went a land route. So how could it be the Heshivcha, the Eretz Mitzrayim, on the ocean, in boats? Right, when that's not the way, according to that opinion that says that the only Isser is to go back and retrace the steps backwards, then this pasuk seems not to hold from that. This pasuk seems to say that the way that God said not to go back to Egypt even includes going by a sea route, not a land route. So I wanted to say that, adarava, this fits very nicely. It says, baderech asher, the same way that I told you not to go back, right? Meaning tracing back the route. Except you can have a problem. Because when you get to Yam Suf, if you trace back the route that the Klal Yisrael took, you get to Yam Suf, unless the sea splits, you're not going to be able to get over unless you get a boat. That's part of the klala. You're going to go back the exact same way that I told you not to go, meaning retracing your route, and when you get to Yam Suf, it's not going to split for you. You're going to have to go, but on the Yos, you're going to have to go on boats. So that could be part of the tochacha also. Right? You'll have to go the same route that you came, except over here you're going to need a boat where you didn't need a boat for that crossing of the Yamsa. Okay. Set next. A little bit before that. It says that there are 98 klalas, tochachos, warnings of what will happen if we don't keep the Torah. And then it says, V'gam, find the pasuk, Gam kol choli v'chol mako asher lo kasu b'sefer haTorah zos, yalim Hashem alecho ad yishamdach. It's not enough, the 98 things that the Torah delineates, there's also going to be choli and mako, two more, right, that are not written in this. So Chazal say, what are the two that aren't written? That's Mises HaTzadikim. Kol Choli V'Chol Maka is Mises HaTzadikim. That Tzadikim are going to die, that is not written. Those are curses that are written in the Torah. So what does that mean? Why aren't they written? Why is everything else written? And this is only alluded to. Kol Choli V'Chol Maka, and why double? It's only one thing, Mises HaTzadikim. So I have a few different possibilities. One is, first of all, Mises HaTzadikim has two negatives to it. One is that Tzadikim are not here, so they can't protect you. And secondly, there are a lot of ramifications that come from Mises HaTzadikim that entail what will be the hashlachot, the consequences of the mitzvah tzaddikim. That's the second thing. How will it impact on you, aside from the fact that tzaddikim will be you? So therefore, it's two different things. What does it mean? Why isn't it written? So one idea it's thinking of is because everything else has specific parameters. You know what the curse is, right? An enemy's going to come. They're going to take your children. They're going to take your crop, whatever. It has a specific framework. But Mises of Tzaddikim has consequences that you can't even think about. They are unlimited. They're not something you can fit into a framework. The consequences of not having leaders and not having tzaddikim in the door are something that can't be delineated and therefore can't be written down.
That means even natural cause, old age.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
In a very short time, right. That's one possibility. Second possibility is the major impact of Misas HaTzadikim is that the Torah Shebaal Peh will be affected. Torah Shebichsav is not going to be affected if tzaddikim aren't here. Pick up permission. It's not affected whether there are leaders, tzaddikim, talmidei chachamim or not. But Torah Shebaal Peh is affected. Therefore, the curse can't be written in Torah Shebichsav because it's not a curse of Torah Shebichsav. It's a curse of Torah Shebaal Peh. And therefore, it was left to Torah Shebaal Peh. It wasn't written. It's another possibility. A third possibility is based on the Michtam Eliyahu. The Michtam Eliyahu says, why is this curse? God doesn't give us curses just stam. They're all therapeutic. They all come to correct something that was wrong. What does this come to correct? That God's going to take away our leaders and our sages. He says, one of the problems that leads to galus and leads to all these klolus is that even when Klal Yisrael keep the mitzvahs, they keep it mitzvahs anoshim lumada. They keep it by rote, by habit. They don't think into it. They don't understand what they're doing and do it with kavana, which also means that they do it just as external actions and don't realize that by doing it, they have to inculcate character traits, ideas, ideals, standards, values. It's not just to be like every goy, but keep Shabbos, eat kosher. But to eat kosher, like goyim, eat treif. It's if we eat kosher, we're supposed to eat with a higher purpose, with a different idea. We're supposed to create a holy atmosphere. I'm leches kohanim v'goy kadosh. The mitzvahs are supposed to inculcate within us a certain lifestyle. But if you just do it by rote, you end up having the same lifestyle as the goyim. Same values, the same standards, the same goals, except you do it kosher. You do it kosher. Right? I remember when I was in Miami, I had a balabos, and Yitzi's not going to be able to figure out who it was, so I'll say the whole mice the way it was. I had a balabos, a very fine man, no longer alive, the mice. And he once came to me, very upset. And this was in the early days that I was in Miami. We didn't have a mikveh in Miami yet in our neighborhood. The nearest mikveh was half an hour, 40 minutes away by car. Okay, so women couldn't go to the mikveh Friday night on Yontif. And it was a schlep to go to the mikveh, Miami Beach. We didn't have a yeshiva, a day school in our area. The children had to be bused 40 minutes every day to school. And we surely didn't have a yeshiva high school or a yeshiva beis medrash in the community. So this guy came to me, and he said, I'm very upset, Rabbi. There is one thing that this community is missing, that if we'd only have it, we would really be a top-notch Torah community. So I was really excited, because I figured he's talking either about a yeshiva or a mikveh, or a mikveh. And I said to him, you know, with great anxiousness and anticipation, right, because I figured if he'll tell me it's a mikveh or a yeshiva, I'll say, look, if it bothers you so much, I'm making you the chairman of the mikveh committee or the yeshiva committee, and get a mikveh here, get a yeshiva. It really bothers you, you know, so do something about it. So I asked him, I said, well, what is that one thing that the community is missing that would make it a top-notch Torah community? He said a high-class, top-rate French, glatt-kosher French restaurant. Now, after I regained consciousness, trying to figure out where to put the mikveh in this restaurant, it's not that there's something wrong with a glatt-kosher French restaurant. That's fine. But that is makes a community a Torah community. Maybe it makes it a French community, right? Maybe it makes it a culinary community. Maybe it makes it a good social community. But what does that have to do with Torah? But that's the thing. We have the standards of the Goyim. And in a Goyish community, whatever, what are the nice eating places, that's what makes a community. So we just take it and make it glatt kosher. So what it basically, you're a glatt kosher Goy. But the Rosh doesn't want glatt kosher Goyim. He wants glatt kosher Jews. He wants different standards, different values. That's the idea. So therefore, when people keep the mitzvahs anoshim l'mor, they're frum. But it's all external. It's all just by rote. They don't realize what it means. They don't change their lifestyle. They don't have different values and different standards. So part of the problem is that when there's gedolim, people don't have to think. The gedolim think for you, right? You don't have to think for yourself. So the Rosh Hashanah is starting to take away the gedolim, says the Michtam Eliyahu, and you're going to have to start thinking for yourself. When you think for yourself, you're going to have to keep the Torah with a lot of thought and not just by rote. Now, what does that mean? The Chora, we ask a Gadol, we ask a Rav, advice, right? Isn't that right? Das Torah. So I saw recently a Rabbeinu Yona that says that asking advice does not mean that you go to somebody and he tells you what to do. You go to him because really a person can't know all of the information he needs to know to make an intelligent decision. Some of it because he doesn't know the information. Somebody knows more information than him. Sometimes because he may know the information, but his eyes are blinded to it because he doesn't want to anticipate that part. He has an issue that he's deliberating, and he has to make a decision, and there are pros and cons of all the different options, but he, in his heart, wants this option to be the one that he does because he's biased to that. So his Yetzer Hara makes him see that option in the glowingest terms, all the pros and no cons, and all the other options, he sees all the cons and no pros. And he thinks he makes an intelligent decision. Well, I really, what's it called, deliberated, and I really investigated, and I took everything into consideration, I made the right decision. Foolishness. You saw what you wanted to see, and you made the decision based on what you wanted the decision to be, not what it really was. So, therefore, we ask advice. You go to find out, maybe there's information I don't know. So you ask somebody, you have to make it, is there something in the Torah that would tell me I can't do this, or I have to do this, or whatever. Maybe I don't know the information. And even if I know the information, maybe somebody will be able to tell me, well, really, this is your Yetzer Hara talking to you, and really, this option is better than this option, right? But you see this option better because you don't want to see the other option too well. After you get the information, then nobody can make a better decision than you because it's your decision. It's your life. So you're going to spend a lot more time and a lot more seriousness coming to that decision than anybody else could possibly do for you. So there's two parts to asking advice. One is, yeah, ask advice. And that person will guide you and give you enough information that you can then make an intelligent decision. But ultimately, the decision has to be yours, even when it comes to Das Torah. The Gadol doesn't make up your mind, doesn't think for you. He gives you all the information that now you can think and come to a decision based on what he told you. That's how an Eitz is supposed to be. That's how Das Torah is supposed to be. So therefore, when there aren't any Gadolim, right, you're going to have to make all these cheshbonos on yourself. You're going to have to think into what you're doing. You're not going to be able to rely on other people to think for you, right? Even, surely not the wrong way, and even in the right way. You're going to have to come to really think deeply into what you're doing, and that will correct the the fault of doing the mitzvahs by rote. So that is that klala. Okay, now let's go back a little bit more. Before all of this, we came into Eretz Yisrael, and as the Hakadoma, the preface to coming to Eretz Yisrael, there were 11 klalos and 11 brachos said, and Har Grizim and Har Evel. Half of the people, what's it called, stood on Har Grizim, half of the people stood on Har Evel, the Levium and Kohanim stood in the middle, and they said out loud, Or ha'ish asher lo yakim lo yas asher yasa pesel maseicha. Cursed is the person who makes an idol and puts it in private, secretly. Most of these things are things that are done secretly that nobody can know about. And since everybody's responsible for everybody else, so how do you know? How do you control when people do things secretly and you don't know about, and you're responsible? So before we went into Eretz Yisrael, it's one of the ideas we gave curses to people who would do these things, and blessings to people who wouldn't do them. Special bracha. Now the Gemara says in Sota that the order of things was the following. Half of the Shvatim, the Torah delineates which ones, went up on Hagrizim. Half of the Shvatim went up on Hareva. The Kohanim and Levim stood in the valley between the two mountains, and they first said the brachos. Baruch ha'ish asher lo yaseh pesel. Blessed is the person who doesn't make a pesel. And the people answered, Amen. Then they said the converse. Or ha'ish asher yaseh. Cursed is the person who does make a pesel and put it away privately. The Torah doesn't speak about both things. It only speaks one of them. Right? It only says the curses. And we're supposed to know that the bracha is the inverse of the curse. Okay? L'chaora, since the blessings were said first, wouldn't it have made more sense if the Torah delineated the blessings, and then we'd know that the curses are the inverse of the blessing, since the blessings were said first? So why did the Torah say the curses and tell me infer the blessing from the curse when the blessings were said first? Either tell me both of them, or tell me the blessings and let me infer the curses. But why tell me the curses? I should infer the blessings since the blessings were said first. That's the question. So I was thinking of one answer could be that we want people, this is a deterrent, this is a warning. People take to heart more when they're warned what's going to be terrible than what they're promised what's going to be good. Right? You tell a kid, you know, you're grounded for 2 weeks if you do this and this, right? It means more to him than you're going to get a lollipop if you don't do it. Okay. So the Rabban Shalom wanted to impress upon us more the warning than the stick, than the carrot. Let's think of another idea. The whole Torah is to take that which, if you don't guide it and channel it, will be a curse and turn it into a blessing. That's what the Torah is all about. Turning what, without guidance and channeling and control, will automatically be a blessing, turn into a blessing. So therefore, the Torah said the curses, and said, you take those curses and you turn them into a blessing. That's what this world is all about. Taking things that people do without guidance, without control, and are therefore a curse, you turn them into a blessing. So that's why the Torah said the curses and told us to turn them into blessings. Okay, next. Let's go back to, I think last week, if we didn't, then I'll do it now, we spoke about why it's wrong to do averas and thinking that you're going to benefit from them and good is going to come from them. I think we gave the example with the conservative movement, and anybody remember if we spoke about that or not last week? Here? Huh? Here? Well, so I speak so many places, I don't remember what I said where. Okay, then we'll do that now. And then we'll go back to the beginning of the Sedra. You know what? Let's start with the beginning. If we have time, we'll do this also. I think we should have time. The Sedra starts out with V'hoya kisavol ha'aretz. And the Ora Chaim HaKadosh says, we have a rule. Whenever it says V'hoya, is Lashon Simcha. Vayehi is Tzara. The simple idea is Vayehi is Vay. And V'hoya is Simcha. There are deeper reasons why Vayehi is Lashon Tzara. And V'hoya is Lashon Simcha, but not for now. So, just that's the rule. Okay, so if it says V'hoya Kisov Al Aretz, it means you'll come into Eretz Yisrael B'Simcha. So the Aruch Chaim Kodesh says that echoes the following: Oz Yimalei Schok Pinu. You really can't have full Simcha till we're all in Eretz Yisrael and Mashiach is here, and that's seemingly what he means. That it's talking about real Simcha will only be when you'll be in Eretz Yisrael ultimately and for good. Then there'll be Simcha. Till then, V'hoya, the Simcha, won't be complete. Oz Yimalei Schok Pinu. Then you'll be able to fill your mouth with Simcha. Okay. That, I think, is what he really simply means. But there's a deeper idea why it starts this Sedra, V'hoya Kisov Al Haaretz. And that is that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael has to be done b'simcha. It's a condition, and we'll see why. I have one or two ideas why it has to be like that, some more simple and some more complex, which we'll get to, of why this mitzvah has to be done b'simcha. First of all, where do we see that is the case? The Rabbanu Shel Olam, Avram Avinu, was in Eretz Yisrael 5 years before Lech Lecha, when he was 70 years old. Because that's when Bris Ben HaBesorim was. If you make all the cheshbonos of the, 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak, right, then 30 years before that had to be the Bris Ben HaBesorim. That means Avram Avinu was 70 years old, because Yitzchak was born when he was 100. 70 was 5 years before Lech Lecha, and he seemingly was in Eretz Yisrael. So how was he in Eretz Yisrael 5 years before Lech Lecha? So the Shalom HaKadosh says, based on the Sefer Olam, that Avram Avinu was traveling around, and he came to Eretz Yisrael on his own. And that's when the Rabban Shalom made Bris Ben HaBesorim. And then he sent him back to Chutz Laretz for 5 years. And then 5 years later, we told him, Lech Lecha, I want you to come back and settle in Eretz Yisrael. So the obvious question is, if God knew that 5 years later he's going to command him to come back, why did he send him back for 5 years? Why didn't he let him stay here already? Why send him back and then command him to come back? Tell him, look, I was planning on making you come here anyway 5 years from now. You might as well stay. Says the Shalom HaKadosh, because Klal Yisrael needed, throughout their history, Gagui for Eretz Yisrael. They had to have a special desire to live in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And the Avos created the reservoir of Kochos that Klal Yisrael would have for all time. Avram Avinu, by the Akedah, the Reb Chaim Volozhiner says it. All the Asara Nisyonos of Avram Avinu created powers for the Jewish people for all time. The fact that we have the ability to sacrifice ourselves, our families, our Kiddush Hashem, comes from the Akedah. The fact that we have the ability to leave Chutz Laretz and come to Eretz Yisrael comes from Lech Lecha, and so on and so on. He says that God knew that the Jewish people would be in Chutz Laretz a good portion of our history. And if we didn't long to be in Eretz Yisrael, we'd lose that connection. So therefore, the Rabban Hashem sent Avram Avinu back after he saw how great Eretz Yisrael was, and he really wanted to live here. He sent him back. So for 5 years, he would chalish, when will I be able to go back? And those 5 years of anxiously awaiting returning to Eretz Yisrael created a reservoir for all generations that no matter where we were and for how long, we'd have these tremendous anxiety of longing to come back to Eretz Yisrael, gaguing for Eretz Yisrael. So when we came here finally, we'd be happy about it. We'd be happy. So why? Why is it necessary this mitzvah has to dafka be happiness? So, we'll see. Hold on 1 second. What I'm going to say is going to answer your question too. It wasn't included, but it'll answer it. The first answer is simple. Then we'll get to a little deeper answer. The first answer is that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not just being here, it's settling Eretz Yisrael. Settling means developing an economy, it means working the land and developing the land. It means being settled in Eretz Yisrael, not just living here. It's not a mitzvah of Diras Eretz Yisrael, it's a Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. In order to be settled, in order to settle, you have to be settled. You have to be Meyushav. If you're not happy, you're not settled. You can't be settled somewhere if you're not happy. So in order to mekayim the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, by its very nature, you have to be happy here. Similar to another halacha. If you are uncomfortable putting on tefillin, right, you're not potter from tefillin, unless it's life-threatening or going to put you to bed maybe or whatever. But if the tefillin itch your head, right, and by putting on the tefillin you get what's it called, itchy, you have to be itchy to put on the tefillin, right? If what's a mitzvah that applies to women also, what's it called, if eating matzah, Pesach night, right, scratches your throat and you really don't like it, you get a stomach ache because of it, right, you have to eat matzah. It's uncomfortable, but the mitzvah is a mitzvah unless there's such extenuating circumstances. It doesn't have to be life-threatening, but it's really, really oppressive. There's a mitzvah's exception to that, which is sukkah. If you're uncomfortable in the sukkah, you're potter from the mitzvah sukkah. Why? Why is sukkah different? So I want to say the same idea. Because the mitzvah of sukkah is teshvu. You should dwell. Teshvu means you should be miyushav. You should be settled in the sukkah. If you're uncomfortable, then you're unsettled. Then you're not mekayim the mitzvah. Then there's no mitzvah. The mitzvah is to be settled. Same mitzvah. Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael, yeshivas sukkah. In fact, Rav Kook, I think, says that there's a connection between, oh, not Rav Kook, the Vilna Gaon says, there's a connection between the two. Right? The only mitzvah is that you're mekayim with your whole body. Sukkah and, right, you go whole body, even with your boots, the Hasidim say, the mud on your boots into the sukkah. Same thing with Eretz Yisrael. I once wanted to say, when I came here, I spoke in Mavo Charom, the first sukkahs I was here, and I said that Eretz Yisrael is even greater than sukkah. Because by sukkah, we don't find that the ground of the sukkah is part of the mitzvah. The walls, the schach. Theoretically, you could have a sukkah in outer space, not 100% halachically, because then the mechitzas wouldn't be good, but you wouldn't have to need the ground, okay? As long as you have maybe a piece of paper on the floor or whatever, and then you're elevated, you're weightless. You need something that the mechitzas... What? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the height of the thing, but you don't need a floor. The floor is not part of the mitzvah, the chorus. Ah, so that's a shaila, how the mechitza could be a mechitza if it starts more than 3 tefachim above the ground. So that's what I'm saying. You could be in the air, have a piece of paper floating with you, so the height of the thing starts on the piece of paper. So, but it's not really a ground. It's not ground. But Eretz Yisrael, even the ground is part of the mitzvah. The ground is also kodesh. So the whole, in Eretz Yisrael, the sides, the top, and the ground is all part of the mitzvah. Okay, in any case. So that's why by sukkah also, it has to be that you feel settled. Because if you're uncomfortable, there's no mitzvah. You're not settled. It's not called yeshiva sukkah. Okay. But there's another reason. The Rambam says that reward that the Torah promises in this world, that you'll have nice conditions, crops and rain and peace and all these things are not reward. Reward for mitzvah is only in the world to come. So what does the Torah promise, all these physical material things? Because the Torah says that if you'll keep mitzvahs and you'll show me that that's what you want, I'll give you conditions that'll make them conducive to keep mitzvahs. But the Rambam says there's a condition to that. It's not just keeping the mitzvahs. You have to keep the mitzvahs b'simcha u'b'tuv leiv. You have to keep them with joy and a good heart. If you do that, then you get these ideal circumstances. And in fact, Yemos HaMashiach, when we'll all be in Eretz Yisrael, right, B'Simcha, Gedola, that's the purpose of it, that we should have the most ideal circumstances to be able to get the greatest Olam Haba. It's not the reward, Yemos HaMashiach. It's a means to reach that reward of Olam Haba in the most ideal way. But why is that a condition? Why isn't it enough just to keep the mitzvahs? Why do you have to keep them b'simcha v'tuv leiva? In this week's Sedra, it says that we go into Golus, tachas ha-shelo avadato ha-shem lokecha b'simcha v'tuv leiva. Right? In place, because you didn't serve God, b'simcha v'tuv leiva. So why is that Golus? Right? It seems that's the source of the Rambam. If you'll do it b'simcha v'tuv leiva, you won't go into Golus, you'll have good, ideal circumstances. And that's Yimos HaMashiach. Right? The most ideal circumstances. If you don't keep the Torah b'simcha v'tuv leivav, then I won't give you those circumstances. So I was thinking the idea is the following. What is a person, how does, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, kachi darka shel Torah. You want to know if you're on the path of Torah? This is it. This is the test. Pas v'melech, you shall need bread and salt, drink water, measured out, sleep on the floor, not on a bed, live a life of suffering, and if you can still busy yourself in Torah learning and observance, then Ashrecha v'tov lach, then you'll be fortunate and good for you. Ashrecha b'olam hazeh, you'll be fortunate in this world and good for you in the next world. So the obvious question is, if that is the condition to be b'derech haTorah, not too many people are b'derech haTorah. What does it mean? So we've explained the past. What it means is the following. What gives you pleasure and makes you feel fortunate in this world? Torah and mitzvahs, you understand that this world is a place for Torah and mitzvahs, and that's what you're here for. And all the other things are merely enhancements of that. They should be able to do it properly. And therefore, if those other things come in conflict with Torah and mitzvahs, you're willing to forfeit them. And also, if you don't have those other things, but you have Torah and mitzvahs, you still feel fortunate. And you feel good. Because when I say, at least I have the main thing in this world. But if the main thing in your life is creature comforts, not Torah and mitzvahs, and therefore if you don't have them, you're miserable. So then obviously the Torah is not the main thing in your life. Those things are the main thing in your life. And therefore, if there's a conflict between them and Torah, you'll choose them. Right? If you can live in a community where you'll have all the creature comforts, you'll have a beautiful house, and you'll have a great job with a good salary, but Torah and mitzvahs is going to be, very much hampered because the community is really not a good community. Or you can live in a great Torah community where you'll have all the options of doing mitzvahs and learning Torah in a much more ideal way, but you won't have such a nice house and you won't have such a good salary. Which would you choose? So if the Torah is the main thing in your life, you'll choose the second option. If creature comforts are the main thing in your life, you choose the first option. Whereas a conflict doesn't have to be a conflict. So for a person who the ikkar in his life is Torah and mitzvahs, having those creature comforts can only be positive. Because if they conflict with your Torah, you'll forfeit them. Because even if you didn't have them, you'd feel fortunate. So you wouldn't use them if they conflict with the main thing in your life. So God says, for you, giving you those creature comforts can be positive. Because you won't abuse them, you'll only use them if they're positive. But for somebody who the ikkar in his life is those creature comforts, and when it comes in conflict with Torah, then you're going to forfeit the Torah, then I'm not going to give you those things because they're going to be to your detriment. You're going to use them and abuse them in a way that they're not going to be for your good eternally. So better not to have them. Sometimes then, you know when you'll produce? When you have tzaris or whatever. So therefore, that's what it says. Because you didn't serve God b'simcha, I'm not going to give you those great, right? You're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael and simcha, and because it's not going to be good for you. You're going to be kochi votzim yavi. You're going to be vayishman yeshurun vayivat. You're going to get fat and kick. You're going to have the opposite effect. Better you should be in Gaulis and have to live with Yisurim, and then, you'll produce better. You'll be more frum when you're poor than when you're rich. But if you understand that being rich is only an aid to your Torah, and that's the ikkar, then being rich is a positive thing. That'll make you rich. So therefore, the Rambam says, God's only going to give you these ideal circumstances to keep the mitzvahs if they're ideal circumstances. All material things are only ideal circumstances for somebody who sees his main simcha and fortune in Torah and mitzvahs. But if you don't get simcha and fortune in Torah mitzvahs, you don't consider that your fortune and simcha in life. You consider all these other material things. But this you have to do, so you do it. But you don't do it with a simcha and a tuv levav, then giving you those creature comforts is not going to be positive. Then better you should be in Golus. That's the condition. And therefore there's no contradiction between the fact that you're supposed to keep the Torah of the simcha of a tuv levav, and that keeps us out of Golus in Eretz Yisrael, and the fact that we're supposed to keep the Torah's nikneish b'yisurin, right? In b'chukosai teleichu, Eretz Yisrael's nikneish b'yisurin, and b'chukosai teleichu, amal v'yagia, you have to put in effort and toil. It's no contradiction. Torah, if you understand that this is what your life is, and this is what should make you feel fortunate and happy, it doesn't have to be fun. It could be something that you have to put a lot of toil and a lot of effort and that you have to, suffer for. But if you understand what the benefit is, you can be happy with that. That kind of life can be a fortunate life. But if you think that the main thing in your life is having fun, comfort, then that's miserable. So therefore, there's no contradiction between the simcha of keeping Torah and the fact that it comes with difficulty and yisurim and whatever, because things that are difficult aren't necessarily not the simcha. It depends what your outlook is. Right? Sometimes something can come with great difficulty, but if it's important to you, you feel fortunate that you're able to have it, even though you have to work for it, even though you have to put toil into it. It's not necessarily fun, but it's worth it. That's the idea. Therefore, since the whole mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is the reward where you'll have the ideal physical circumstances, that's what the Hayah Kisov al Aretz, right? It has to be b'simcha. Because if you're not b'simcha about it, right, then you're missing the major ingredient in what, and that's why it doesn't say, because you didn't serve God b'simcha, I'm going to put you in galus. Tachas asher avadata. It's in place of, if this is going to bring you to keep Torah and mitzvahs, this is the ideal situation, that's what you get. But if the opposite is true, and for you, keeping Torah and mitzvahs is going to be more enhanced by having tzaris and being poor, then I'll make you poor. So it's tachas. It's one in the place of the other. It's not, what's it called? It's not a punishment. It's just God will determine what is going to be in your best interest eternally. To have comfort or not to have comfort. If you understand that the comfort is only there to enhance your Torah, and that the Torah is the ikar, then the comforts are great for you. If you understand the comforts to be the main thing in your life, then the comforts are not going to be good for you. That could be another idea.